Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spoken Heard. This is Susan Dobie Chase, and I am thrilled to bring you today Mr. Gabriel De Los Reyes. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm so excited to be on this show with you, Spoken Heard. I'm so excited. We're definitely going to get into some good things.
I hope so. I really, I'm so impressed with your huge resume. As a young person, you have just done so much already, and I can't wait to talk to you about it. What have you been up to lately?
I'm playing Lorenzo in Shakespeare Miami's Merchant of Venice. We go up in January. We're touring South Florida, and we're going to be all over. We have four shows. The first one is in Miami. We have one in Hollywood in Pinecrest, and then we have one in Boca. So I've been deep into those rehearsals, and it's been a lot of fun because I got my degree in when I was at the university. I got it in theater. So now, having been polished as a spoken word artist and writing poetry, I got my degree in English as well. Now it's a lot of fun that I'm able to really put all of my skills and everything I learned while I was at the university to good use. And also, a lot of what I did in spoken word has really influenced what I'm doing professionally now. So it's been a lot of fun.
Good, good. And speaking of that, I was wondering if we could start things out with you sharing something. Can I prevail upon you to do that?
Yeah, definitely. This one is it's one that I wrote for my English class, and I was gonna do a lot of the older stuff that I did when I was in school. I used to do a lot of longer pieces. I was really really deep into the slam poetry scene, so a lot of my poems were 3 minutes long, and I had the whole, you know, make it under 3:30 and make sure it's, you know, it's a certain length, but I was actually wanting to get into some written stuff and make sure that I can push forth the pen game a little bit more than the spoken word. So this one is called White Lines. I performed this poem a lot when I was in school. I won a few competitions with it, and this one is White Lines. I think I have these powers. You told me so. Collecting me underneath your fingernail, rubbing some on your gums to make your face numb so you wouldn't feel anything. I look at you frozen while you shake. At night, your eyes scramble like houseflies trying to make sense of city lights. You meet me for the first time on a clouded mirror as an ashen stripe. And I got this power on the intersection, Grand Ave in your hand, and more and more and more grams. And I can make all my weight disappear now. I lay in apartments and glove compartments. I can make things move, like telekinesis, telekilo, the secrets of Overtown streets, and Celatine, some magic for a dub in a dream. I don't know why people in my city got powers like mine, but for some odd reason they stopped working so you can't see straight. But time is blurry and restless, and fossils fall from nostrils, so you wish you still had super strength to push me away and super speed to run and fly to catch me one more time. And that's it.
I love
that
it. I really love it.
Yeah. Yeah,
did you do a lot of personification in your... Oh, go ahead, please.
Oh no, that one it's it's pretty much about cocaine. So I mean, living in Miami, I mean a lot of us were around that, and so
right.
just had to you know, touch on it, talk about it, and not to say that I was a big cocaine user, but at the same time, I was around it, and it was always there. So, I mean, I'm pretty much just trying to pay homage to a really grim part of my city and make sure that people know that this is a prominent figure and character in my environment. But it's not something that I partake in, but I do want to pay homage to it, knowing that it's a character. It's a character for the city of Miami. So you kind of have to respect
it. Yes, yes. And I love the fact that you right away I understood that it was about cocaine. I love the personification that you use, and it's a wonderful tool for you. I really like that. I was wondering, who encouraged you to start writing? Who encouraged you in general in your life?
When I was young, my dad used to take me to a lot of poetry slams. And when I was younger, I wrote a poem for my mom called Pearls of Wisdom, and my mom really loved it. And, you know, it made her cry and everything. But I was always kind of chosen amongst my peers when I was in class as being, you know, one of the more skilled writers. So I would always, I had kind of like a tribe around me where I would have my mom, who was there at home, and she would tell me, you know, keep writing, but she would also inspire me to write her something. Just because once my parents split up, I used to write her a lot of poems just to keep her encouraged and make sure that she knew that her son was, you know, was doing something with his mind and was there actually being creative. And then in terms of my dad, when he used to come down and visit, and he lived near us for a little bit, he used to take me out to spoken word venues, and that's where I met Paul Flores and Rafael Casal, who was I met him when I was like 14 or 13 at the time. Way before First Wave, and he was he ended up becoming my creative director, which is really interesting. But then Will Durrell one was also a huge mentor. He ended up passing away. He ran one of the biggest poetry scenes out here. So I had a big tribe out here, mainly influenced by my mom, but I had a lot of people around me that were kind of like always telling me, you know, keep writing, keep doing what you got to do. And then Willie Ney approached me when I was performing in Brave New Voices. And then I had more of a pedagogical, formal, academic group of people that were letting me know, look, you can actually write and do it in an academic setting and do it in these symposiums and do it for people that will actually respect your work and let it know that it has social and at times even, you know, political and even the scientific value, because we're here studying the power of words and how people can really be influenced by what you're listening to.
And Willie Ney, and you mentioned the University of Wisconsin-Madison and Rafael Casal. Tell us a little bit about that program, First Wave, that you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit more, I mean, I haven't really visited Madison in the longest, so I mean I'm pretty much removed from them. But when I was there, I did a lot of cool work. I have a lot of fond memories, have a lot of cool connections with people that are still there. And when I was there, I wrote a lot of poetry, did a lot of cool work. I made a lot of cool connections. A lot of my peers there were very talented. I keep up with a lot of them. They all seem to be doing great things. Some of them are in New York. Some of them are still in Madison. A lot of them are in California. some of them are in Texas, and some of them are overseas. So I look at the ones that were younger than me, I look at the ones that were older than me, and I kind of have a cool respect for everyone that was just there to influence me. And I'm hoping that that I'm doing my best to be good as an alumni. So anyone out there listening, if you're a young artist, just understand that your words have merit beyond where you're at, that once you leave your space, once you graduate, once you leave your program, you have to make sure that you leave good memories there and you build good relationships, maintain those relationships. And then once you move on, that you actually bring a little bit of that with you so that people can understand that when you're talking about that place, they realize, oh, wow, he comes from good pedigree. He comes from a good place, that people actually built him up to where he's at. And at that point, you kind of create a nice tribe. You create a cool collection of people, and everyone, I mean, we're all separated. We're all where we're at, but we all will always have a deep, fond respect for one another because we were all selected from our respective cities. So being so far removed from everybody, then coming together, and then now we're pushed away, it just gives more space for the next generation of people that are figuring out, okay, how can we create this art, write these words, and bring it to the masses at large so people can realize, okay, we have good work here, and how can this have value in the work, in the world, in the workplace, and in the marketplace?
So I heard through the grapevine that you had a funny beginner's blunder.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember I was at Brave New Voices, and I had this poem called Whatever Happened to Hip Hop, and that was the one that Willie Nay saw, and he was like, wow, this is great. I want to give you this full-ride scholarship. Come to Madison. You can be in this cohort with 14 other members, and you'll be able to study whatever you want. So I went on stage, and I would do that poem. And every time I went on stage, whether it was at home, whether it was in Brave New Voices at the national level, I would always get a perfect 30. And for anybody listening there right now to Spoken Heard with Susan, basically, if you get a 30, that means you got a perfect score. So you're rated from 1 to 10. And it's a slam poetry, so it's competitive. You're judged by 5 judges. Sometimes they're selected at random. At other times, they're probably important people that have some sort of merit in the spoken word scene. And they'll basically give you a score from 1 to 10, and it goes by decimal points. And if you get a 30, you're basically like the man. So I would always get 30s. And when I went on stage, we were kind of like, we wanted to get into semifinals, and I was with the team from Miami, and it was one of our first times going as a Miami team. When I went with Fort Lauderdale, I was 14, and the first time I went, I got second place. We lost to New York by half a point. Yeah, I was 14. It was awesome. I mean, I kind of got pigeonholed as the beatboxer a little bit because I'm pretty good at beatboxing, but I was a really good writer, and I was the youngest guy on the team, and I think that my skills got us there along with the other talent. But when I was there for the Miami team, I did this hip-hop piece and killed it. Everybody loved it, whatever. I got the 30. We made it to the semifinals, and we had started working on this slavery piece. And my part, I was kind of taking on the role as a slave, sitting on my slave master's bed and waking up. And I had this really beautiful monologue, and I would go into it. But the thing is, we had started creating that piece. We got inspired so soon to flying out there. I think this year it was in California, and we were still rehearsing. Like, we were on the plane rehearsing, and a lot of the people listening, if you were on a slam team in whatever shape or form, you understand that you're rehearsing all the way up to performance dates, because sometimes you just need to perfect it. And I didn't have my piece memorized, so I go on stage, and I've always been deathly afraid of choking on stage or forgetting my words. And I get on stage and my turn comes up and I completely forget my lines and I turn pale white and I'm looking around, and at that moment I wanted to cry and just crawl into a little ball. And then once I get off stage, like, my coach at the time, who was like, he ended up being like the biggest jerk, because he was like, oh, look at you, like, you went from hero to zero, because I got the perfect score, and then I literally went from there to boom, we lost because of you, we didn't make it to finals because of you. And at that point, you realize, like, if you're so talented, or if you're so if you're good, like, you have to make sure that you're on all the time, because just as much as you can take your team to the next level, you can also miss the mark and boom, everything that you just got, you lose. So you just have to be on point. I mean, we were all contributing on the team and we all did great, but I know that by me doing that, I mean, we really missed our chances. And that's just to, like, let people know too, like, any young writers out there, like, if you're going to go on stage, and from now, whenever I go up and I'm performing, I always make sure that I have my piece memorized. If I'm doing it on stage and I'm not going to have a paper, and I got to perform based off memorization. And now that I'm doing Shakespeare, I made sure that I ran through my lines every day for at least 2 hours. I would be in there while I'm driving to work. It's a little bit of a drive. I drive like 40 minutes. I'm working at UPS. Early mornings, the graveyard shift, I pretty much sit in my car and run through lines. And as much as it's an arduous process and it can become really tedious and annoying and boring, you have to do it, because nothing is worse than that feeling of being on stage and not being such a polished performer that you can improvise and kind of give your team member the nudge, like, hey, I don't know my lines, maybe you should just hop into your part. Now that's taught me, like, you want to be so skilled as an artist and a performer that if you're on stage and you forget your lines, you have to give your partner a cue. I don't know my lines, you should go into it. Or, I mean, that's the only way that you can do it. You literally have to learn, okay, what's my plan B? If I lose my lines and I miss them, what am I going to go into? Because chances are you're not going to 100% always be perfect, and unless you run through your lines a million times. So now I've learned, okay, rehearse. And another beginner's blunder that I had, when I was, because now I'm doing a lot of hip-hop and spoken word, I mean, a lot of hip-hop rapping, and one of my coworkers told me about this performance at a strip club, and I'd never done it, and I was like, all right, whatever. I went to the strip club, went to go perform, and I ended up performing at like 4 a.m. and I had to like wait. I had to stand around. I had work at around 4:30. So I had to leave at a certain time. And I was there at 4 a.m, like asking the guy, like, am I going to perform? And he was like, yeah. So I go up and perform, but I was so tired from waiting and everything that I was just at a point where it's like, okay, I don't even care if this is a good performance. I'm just literally going up there like a zombie doing my thing. And I don't even know if it looked good to the audience or not, but just from a young age, I've always been an artist. I've always really been into performing. So just be prepared and speak to your promoter or your organizer and find out if you have the strength and you have the clout to do that. Make sure that they'll let you know, okay, you're performing at this time, and if you don't perform at that time, you have to have the courage to be able to walk away and not need that opportunity, because everyone out there is going to give you, okay, I have this opportunity for you, and you're going to feel like, they'll make you feel like if you miss it, then you're not going to make it. But there's some battles that you may not want to fight. So you just have to be there and show up and be ready, but also know, okay, maybe I should, you know, take this loss and move on.
Absolutely.
There's a lot to it.
I was wondering if I could ask you to read something else or perform something else.
Yeah, definitely. This one here is called Skyline. It's another one that I wrote in an English class, and this one's one that I got critiqued on, and that kind of was fun to give to my peers and let them read it. All right, here goes. It's called Skylines. There are pieces of the sky in my pocket. I found them this morning, feeling the cold cuts with my fingers, pulling them out to sea. They aren't sharp, so I bit off a piece and it tasted like paper. My brother told me to show my girl, but I think she'd steal them. I started sliding the sky inside things, like winter gloves and trees to make them shine. I put some in my wallet for good luck, smoked and sniffed some but didn't get high. Now people push me to share, but I lost all the cloudy ones, and I'm looking for the place where all of these came from. Yeah, this one, that one's a little bit shorter, but I'm at a place right now where I really want to read a lot of more short poems, because I don't want to, you know, go into the old, when I used to read a lot of longer pieces and things like that. I want to kind of test out, okay, what are my page poems, the ones that I wrote for the page, the ones that are more crafted as a writer. So these are a little bit shorter. I know you probably may have wanted something a little bit longer, but I'm trying to test out new ways of expressing myself as a poet.
Excellent. That's fine with me. I know that when I was exposed to your work for the first time, you were doing a lot of DJing, and you said you do a lot of beatboxing, and I know you have all these talents. Where did that come from? What were your inspirations?
Well, when I was young, my dad, he worked for Capitol Records. He was one of the top corporate executives there. Yeah, he used to, he was there when Selena was there. He did the Ricky Martin World Cup anthem. So I would always go to his office, and we recorded for Take Your Kid to Work Day. When I was really young, we recorded Yellow Submarine in the same studio that the Beatles recorded it in the Capitol Records building. So from then on,
wow.
I was so young, I was like, all right, this is where I want to be. This is what I want to do. I mean, later on, that this is what happened. I kind of got into that whole world. And just being around studios and being around everything that had to do with music and writing, and my mom always giving me books, and my dad always giving me good words and playing certain songs that would influence me and make me, you know, build up my swagger and feel a little bit more hip-hop, listening to more urban music. That really influenced me and gave me a deep appreciation for Black culture. It gave me a deep appreciation for rapping. And that all translated into poetry as well, because as a rapper, you deal with words. You deal a lot with choosing the right words, with expressing yourself in a way that's rhythmically and, I want to say swagger, but it's more than that. It's more of like a, it's more like a, kind of like there's a word that for the Italians, they use it. It's the same idea of swagger, but it's kind of like you use your whole style and you develop this method of like, how can I do this through words? If I'm in class and this guy over here says that he's better than me, or he thinks that he has something on me, how can I settle this dispute without using my fists, and how can I use it with words? So I would always dive deep into the craft and work on my words, work on my writing, work on all these things so that I could move up academically, but I could also get, you know, the attention and the stares from the girls. I could also get the respect from my friends. I got along with like the school bully. He became my friend because I was the only guy that would sit around with him and rap with him and chill when everybody else would treat him like the bully. You know, everybody else would see him as, you know, this big tough guy. So I was the guy that was there to rap with you, to work on words. So when I was in class, I always wrote and I always made sure that I would always craft it. So I was always drawn to that. I was always drawn to creating good pieces that sounded good, that were up to par with the MCs that I listened to, because I listened to a lot of Tupac. I listened to Tupac and Biggie and Eminem when he came out, and a lot of these artists always encouraged me from their music, like, hey, you can step your game up. Hey, look how good I wrote. So I'm like, okay, how can I write something that is up to par with that? And now I wanna go up against, you know, Shakespeare and all these guys. I mean, not to say that I'm in competition with them, but as an artist, I think you have to hold yourself up to a certain standard and understand that, okay, if these guys, and also there's a lot of great women writers too, like Virginia Woolf and Emily Dickinson, if I can write as well as them, then how can I create my own body of work? And that's what I'm aiming to do. I want to make sure that my spoken word that was part of my past and that was part of my upbringing that influenced my rapping. My rapping actually influenced my spoken word, and then it's turned into rap. And now that I'm revisiting my spoken word to speak it with you, now I can get into Shakespeare, reading another playwright's words and put that through with acting. So a lot of guys like Lemon Anderson, who was one of my mentors as well, I have his phone number in my cell phone. He's always influenced me as well, and he's always been there to kind of let me know that you can be a hip-hop artist and you can be someone that comes from the more spoken word side of things, but you can do it in a Shakespearean way. You can do it in a way that's not considered completely street, not considered completely urban, because he comes from a rougher side of the tracks. He's been to jail. He's done a lot of crazy things, but he's still Lemon Anderson, and you have to respect what he's saying. So when it comes to that, you have to respect people from all walks of life. It doesn't matter what your past was. So I'm here.
Right.
My past comes from spoken word and writing, and now I'm here trying to do Shakespeare. And just want to give a shout-out to the whole Merchant of Venice crew, whoever's out there listening. I'm just going to keep doing my best to make it happen. And I'm excited for everything that's to come.
Well, I'm surprised that our half an hour is almost up. And I want to thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
I would love it if you could. You're welcome. I would love it if you could read us out of the show.
Yeah, I have two pieces that I could possibly do. One of them is a memorized piece that I have, and then I have another one that's more of a page poem. So I kind of want to give you the choice. I mean, which one would you want? Would you want the one that I've done before that's kind of memorized and maybe a little bit rusty, so I may mess up, but I'll probably hit it, or one that I wrote and that is, you know, a little bit easier to do just because it's in front of me?
Do the easy one. Make it easy on yourself.
Okay. All right, this one is called Miami Make Me Heavy. I am a giant plunked in front of the mirror with a cloak draped on my bushy back. My windows rattle when I breathe. I have wooden planks around my wrist. Scabbard shanks hang from the bracelets made of teeth and broken fingers, some I stole from Creole babies placed on roads in Little Haiti. I have breasts that look like jellyfish, a spider spout sprouting from my scalp, gold mines striking out my mouth. My skin is turning bamboo green. There's a tattooed woman naked. She's a spy for my spirit. She's dancing before the mirror. Behind her, a beetled palm tree shaking. I flick a finished black like a fossil, crushed from boots once it shrunk. Then I stretch my skeleton like a shining crucifix, closing the fixes and trunks. I can take notes with my nostrils and secretly watch my morning flare up around me. My toenail looks like a rhinoceros poking out of mud. I found binoculars. Now I watch for enemies. That's it.
Perfect. And thank you again so much for being with us today. This is Spoken Heard. I'm Susan Dobie Chase. Please tune in next week when we'll have another multi-talented artist.